Okay, we're going to begin here on the top of Mem Bet Amud Aleph. The Mishnah reads, "Hamafkid ma'ot etzel chavero, someone who leaves money with his friend to watch. Tzaran v'yishlinan le'achurav, if he wrapped them up, put them into a sack and threw over his back. O she masram levno v'yito aktanim, or he gave them to his children who were minors." And then the Mishnah probably should read, "O," a third case here, "O now b'fneim shlokro, he did not watch them properly, did not lock them up properly. Chayav, then in all these cases he is chayav. Shloshimer kederech hashomrim, because he did not watch it appropriately. He is a poshe in all these instances, and since he didn't watch it appropriately, he is chayav. Vim shimer kederech hashomrim patur. If he watched it appropriately, then he is patur. So obviously that would be in case of a shomer chinam was patur from geneva unaveda, but not for a shomer sachar. The case is in the Mishnah, we can understand what it means that he didn't watch them properly. If he gives them to his minor children, that's inappropriate. If he doesn't lock them up properly, that's inappropriate. But El Tzaran Bishalam Lachurab, he puts them into his sack and he throws them over his back. What is a better way to watch the money? I mean, they're on his body, he's watching them. Why isn't that sufficient? When it comes to Maaser Shini, bringing up the money to Yerushalayim, it says, "Vitzarta kesef biyadecha." You should take the money, you should wrap it up and put it in your hand. Afal pi shetzurim yu biyadecha. Even though they're wrapped up and they're sealed and they're in your pack, yu biyadecha, they should be in your hand. I mean that the only appropriate way to watch them is to have touch or to be in a position where you can touch them all the time and know that they're there. It's not simply enough that they're in your sack, but they have to also be in a position where you can be mamesh them, that you can actually touch them and know that they're there. V'amar b'Yitzchak. So now when we're on this, we have a number of memorot from Yitzchak about money. L'olam yekaspo shodam matzui biyado. The person should always have his money available to him. So now this matzui biyado is not, like we said before, matzui biyado means literally in his hand, but rather it has to be liquid. They should always have liquid assets that are available to him. Shnemar v'tzartar kesef biyadecha. He should always have money available in case something comes up and there's a business opportunity, schora, something that he can buy, that you should always have liquid assets that are available. That you shouldn't have all your money invested or all your money in a liquid asset so that you are unable to use the money that you need currently. I'm Rabbi Yitzchak. Another is member from Yitzchak about money. Lolam yeshlish adam et ma'otav. A person should divide his money into thirds. Shlish bikarka, a third in land. Mashal brings down an interpretation. Shlish bikarka means that you actually store it in the ground. But the more simple and probably that makes sense in this context is that you should have a third of your money in real estate. Shlish bikarka me'atia. You should have a third of it invested. In their day it was buying and selling goods and merchandise. Today maybe invested in whether it's bonds or stocks or some sort of investment vehicle. Shlich shtachad yado. And a third of it in a liquid asset available to you to be used, again, because in case something comes up that you have liquid assets, whether it's something negative or some expense that you unforeseen expense, or whether it's something positive where there's a business opportunity, that you should always have liquid assets available. I'm Rabbi Yitzchak, another member of Rabbi Yitzchak. Ein bracha mitzuyah b'davar samui min ha'ayin. Bracha only helps something when it's covered from the eye. So movement ayin. So Rashi says in a bracha here shmitberich rabba meilav, that the object itself in multiplies or gets better even without your intervention. That only happens when it's a movement ayin, when it's not visible to the peeper. Says that Hashem will give your bracha basamecha and your silos and that which you've gathered in. But asamecha, the play here on the word asamecha is samui, something that is hidden from the eye. And Tana Rabbi Shmuel, and bracha mitzvah davar she'ein ha'ayin shaletet bo. There's no bracha except for something where the eye is not visible to the eye. Shneamar, because it says Yitzav Hashem etcha to bracha basamecha, that Hashem should give you a bracha basamecha. Again, the play on samui min ha'ayin, that's something that is not visible. The question here about why she'ein shaletet bo. That the eye is not, it's not visible to the eye. So that could be one of two possibilities. Either it's the ayin hara, meaning that it should be covered and not be visible or not be obvious to others that you have this, because anything that people look at or there's an ayin hara shaletet on it, then that's not mitbarech, it doesn't have a bracha. And therefore you should ensure that nothing's out in the open or obvious, and that's how you get the bracha. The other possibility is ayin shaletet bo is that which you don't know about, meaning that not literally ayin in the sense of seeing or visible sight, but rather knowledge, that if you know exactly how much is in a location, then there will be no bracha, because a bracha doesn't work on something where you have firm knowledge of the quantity of the item. The only time you have a bracha is when you're unaware of what's there. And therefore, samui here does not mean samui min ha'ayin in the sense that you can't see it, but rather that you don't know the exact amount that's there. Now we relate back to what Yitzchak said before, that ain't a bracha mitzvah, but there is a samui min ha'ayin. Only something that is hidden from the eye is there a bracha. When there is something hidden from the eye, there's a bracha. It seems over here that it's in a case, for instance, a person has a silo full of produce. So one possibility is that if he doesn't know exactly how much is there, that it might expand or get better without him intervening. But the more likely answer is that it should be something that's positive, that which he does with it, the schora, the price, or the value of the item might go up. If he doesn't focus so much on the exact quantity of that which is there, the bracha is with it, and that there maybe he'll end up getting a good chance at selling it, or if he doesn't focus on it, maybe the market prices go up and he'll be able to sell it more than he thought. All this, again, without focus on the exact quantities and exact values, that which is what leads to bracha. So because of that, the Gemara says, is enough kamina bracha. Someone goes to measure his goren, to measure his produce. Omer, he says, before any year, Hashem should send a bracha in our mas yadenu. He tchilamod, if he already begins to count, baruch hashlech bracha b'kri hazeh, then he should say it. Baruch is Hashem who puts a bracha into this kri. Madad, if he measures it, ba'achar kach birich, and then he gives a bracha, or is it tefillat shav? That already is a tefillat shav. The fish in a bracha mitzuya a little bit davar shakul. There's no such thing as a bracha when it can be exactly quantified, which means a shakul, that which is weighed, little davar madud, that is measured, little davar manuya, that which is counted, little davar hasumoy min ha'ayin, one that which is not visible to the eye. So again, here the meaning of not visible to the eye, I don't think literally means visible, but that which doesn't have exact quantification of the item. Hashem should give a bracha to you, that which is samui min ha'ayin. So also with these brachot, is machloket among the poskim, what it means here. How is halich lamudit gorno? Why is he going to measure his goren? So again, here the possibility is that he's going to measure his goren to take off my srot and shumot. So the problem is that when he goes to measure my srot and shumot, now he's going to quantify that which he has. When he goes to quantify that which he has, that is to his detriment, because then he won't be a bracha anymore. But he's doing it for a mitzvah of shumot and masrot. So therefore we say, make a bracha. That here it's own. There should only be a bracha with that which we do. That even though we're measuring it now, which will take away the possibility of bracha from the unseen, nevertheless, because Hashem promises us if we give Shemot Maaseh, there will be a bracha, so that bracha should be chal on the Goren. So even though we're losing one bracha, the other bracha should kick in because we're taking off Shemot Maaseh. The other thing about Hitchil Amud Omer, once he counts it, he says the bracha, bracha shlech bracha b'kri hazeh. Now is this Birkat HaShevach, right? Do you have to know for sure that there was a bracha in this Kri? And then we say that give a bracha to Hashem, that Birkat HaShevach, only if we know for certain that's the case. Or can you make this bracha even though he doesn't know if there was a bracha put here, because Hashem is koveya that if we take off Chuta Masrot, there definitely will be a bracha in this produce. And since there will be a bracha in this produce, he can make the bracha out of certainty. Right? Or the last possibility is bracha shlech bracha b'kri hazeh, is that Hashem should send bracha into this kri, meaning that it's not a birkat hasherach, whereas again, it's still a request. Because while he's still going about the measuring process, he's still saying baruch hashorech bracha b'kri hazeh, Hashem should send the bracha here. Again, similar to what we said before, the idea that counting it is going to be to the detriment of this individual, that over here he's saying it that it should still be the bracha of Shemot Masrot, as opposed to the first one, which might be that when it's samui min ha'ayin, he gets the bracha, and that's why he's saying here at Tzom, before I've actually counted it, there should be a bracha here. So that might be the two stages here, that they're both birkat bakasha, a bracha of bakasha, and not one is a birkat bakasha and birkat shevach. But the bottom line is that one has to not be so exacting and quantifying when it comes to their monetary or their value or their means, in order that there should be a tremendous bracha associated that which they have, and even if they do have to count, it only should be the Dvar Mitzvah, and that will guarantee that they also get a bracha because of the Dvar Mitzvah. The Gemara continues, Amar Shmuel, so what is the proper way to watch money? Ksafim, Enlem Shmir al-Bakarka. Shmuel makes a categorical statement that the only way to watch money is to bury it, to put it in the ground, and to bury it, that's the only proper Shmir for Karka. So Lodge Tosus here on the left of the dot that discusses whether, once the Shomer has put it into the Karka, is that classified now that if he gets stolen from there that he's an Ones? I mean, for instance, a Shomer Sachar. Shomer Sachar is Chayiv in Gneiva Naveda. What happens if he actually puts it in the Karka, or buries it deep, deep in the Karka, where he's done the best that he could do? What expectations could we have of him? Is then he become or classified as an Ones? Tosus says, from the Mikolot, from the Gemara is it sees it that he would not be classified as an ones, and he would still be chayav for gneivah neveda, even those instances. Though Tosus says from a svara standpoint that he can't believe that that would be the case. Read you a couple of lines. It says, "Ach t'mahon gadolu." It's unbelievable. Lamalu he ones imemik b'karka kufamot. If he goes deep under amot to the ground, buries it. D'mai habelei to the meivat. What else could he have done? I mean, that he's an ones gamor, just like if he got taken by armed robbers, he's classified as an ones for shomer sachar. So to where he buries it deep in the ground, he should be classified as a complete ones. And later on he writes, "Mekom akom ain't svara klal shalonim tzag gnevat ones shipater ba shomer sachar." He says it makes no sense that there can't be a case of ones by gneva for a shomer sachar outside of listed mizuin, outside of armed robbers, that would be classified as an ones, and he won't be chayav for it. So tell us his boys, mean it's a svara that it should be patur. If he does what he's supposed to do, he does the shmir on the karka, that should be sufficient. Amarava. That if he gets the money right before Shabbos, benashmashot, right, in the benashmashot on Shabbos, at that point, Rabbanan don't say go bury it in the ground because it's right coming into Shabbos. The person who's giving the money has to assume that he's not going to put it in the ground right then because it's too close to Shabbos. Vishana motzei Shabbos, but if he leaves over to motzei Shabbos, shir the mekavrino, enough time to bury them, velokavrino, and then he doesn't bury them, mechayiv. Then he's no longer, then he's considered a pusheya because he didn't take care of the money in the proper way that he was supposed to take care of it. If he eats urba midirabanan hu, if he's a yan tamachachum who gave him the money, savar dimli bailei zuzilav dalta, then he can wait even longer than you're going to bury them, because he says, since the tamachachum are makbid to have their avdala ala yayin, so therefore the tamachachum might need liquid assets right after Shabbos, so don't bury them yet, because maybe you want it for avdala. So you give you a little extended time. If you're watching it for a young tamachachum, you give you time, enough time that he knows that he doesn't need it for avdala, and then enough time to dig it, so you have an extended period before you have to actually put it into the ground. Vayidna, and today, dishchichi gashushai, today that they have people going around with metal detectors, or in their day they had poles, and they used to know where everybody kept their money, kept it in the ground. So they used to go around with poles, poking them into the ground to see if they hit anything. If they hit something in the ground, they knew they found it, they used to steal the money. So they moved the location. Once people figured out that the Ganavim were going into the ground, because that's where everybody stored it, they changed the location of where they put them. They put them up on the rafters above the roof area, on the rafters, but below the gag, the outer roof of the house. So the Ganavim got smart, and once everybody moved to the roof, that they used to come and punch holes in the roofs, the outer roofs, in order to see what was in the rafters to steal it. So once they moved to this, then and the only proper solution for storing them is ben shiruta binyan, between the walls, in the stones of the walls of the binyan. Amarova, umod shmo bekotel. Well, Shmuel agrees when it comes to the kotel that is sufficient, or that is a good watching it. Vayidna. So again, the Ganavim caught up with everybody putting it into the wall. So they used to go and knock on the walls to see if they were hollow inside. If they saw there was a hollowness inside, they knew that somebody had stored something there. So then there's only storing them in the walls is only appropriate if you put it right near the foundation or right near the roof. Because either near the foundation or the roof, first of all, when you frame out a building, you frame it out more properly in those areas. And because of that, when you knock on those areas, even if there's a hollow space, you won't hear the reverberation because, again, at the base of the house, there's a foundation there. If you put a hole in there, it's much more solid than the walls above that area, where if you dig out a hole, the hollowness is heard by the knocking. So therefore, it's only appropriate if you do it down below by the foundation or up near the roof, where again, where it has to be, the framing has to be much more solid to hold the roof. So in those instances, that's considered a good watching because the Ganavim from the outside can't tell if there's a hollow space over there. Over there we have a Mishnah that says, you have chametz that had a wall or something collapse on top of it, a pile collapse on top of it. As a din of mevuar, it's din, you don't have to worry about it in Gabi Pesach, you don't have to worry about it because of Bayre, but you might say, it's gone. It's as if it's gone. Has to do with whether a dog can reach it. How do you know? V'tana, kama chapisat kelev. How far down can a dog reach the chametz, or will he go after searching out at the chametz? It's gimel tfachim. So as below gimel tfachim, the dog will not access the chametz. You can see the chametz as if it's mevu'ar. If it's less than bearing under less than 3 tfachim, then we assume the dog, since it will know about it and will go and get it out, it's a possibility the chametz will be removed from there, and it's not considered mevu'ar, it's not considered as it's totally gone. Where it says, achamai, what about in our case? When we have to bury in the karka, what's the qualification for the depth at which you have to bury? It me being in shlosha tefachim, hello. Do you need a 3 tefachim deep to consider to be watched or not? Amalei, hata mishumrecha being in gimel tefachim. Whenever the dog, the issue is smell. The dog will only go after something that it can smell. So therefore, three tefachim is the determination of where the dog, how far the dog can smell, or the distance by which he will still be aware of the chametz of the litter. Here, you're just trying to hide it. You're not trying to bury it so dogs won't know it. They don't come after money. They don't smell money. They're not looking for money. We want to hide it from the people outside or from being obvious to others that it's there. So that should be sufficient. We don't need three tefachim. The camel, so Gemara says, well, how far would you then you have to do? If you don't need gimel tefachim, what would be the proper depth? That would be a tefach. So for money, you will inquire a tefach, because there the job is just to cover it up, to make it that unknown that there's an object in the house or there's money in this house. So bringing that tefach down is sufficient. When it comes to chametz, which is ochel, which is food, which the dog will chase after, then you need three tefachim in order that it'll be not only not visible, but also be that a dog will not go in and search it out and bring it out. So the chametz will be mevu'ar, will be considered as if it's gone. Now we have a case. So Gavra, Davke Zuzei Gabi Chavre, gave our money to his friend. He placed it in a hut of a revolt, a reed hut out in the field, Igdov, and then it was stolen. I'm Rav Yosef. Even though this is a good place to put it in terms of Gneva, because the Ganavim would never think to find the money over there. So in terms of storing it away or keeping it away from the Ganavim, he did a great job. Problem is, they knew where with regards to the fire, right there is a posheya, because this is a very flammable area. It's made out of dried out reeds, and it can catch fire easily, and Ish is a posheya to put it there. It's a case. It was posheya in the beginning because he put it in a place where it could get burnt up. On the other hand, there's an onus in the back end because it got stolen. And in regards to Gneva, it was a good place to put it. So it's Tchilat Bshia, Sofa Ba'ones, Chayav. That is the position of Rav Yosef. The Ikadamri is another Ikadamri that Rav Yosef's position is Avagal Dinian Nura Pshuta, even though with the Gabe Nura Pshuta, the Indian Gabe Nitaruti, when it comes to Ganavim, it was a good watching. Tchilat Bshia, Sofa Ba'ones, Patur. Tchilat Bshia, Sofa Ba'ones would be Patur. The Hilchasad Allah is Tchilat Bshia, Sofa Ba'ones, Chayav. Is actually chayav. Now Tosus over here clarifies that there has to be some sort of causation. There has to be some sort of relationship between the pshia and the onus that happens afterwards. For instance, Tosus points out, if you have an animal that because of your pshia, because of the shomer's pshia, leaves the area and goes out to the agam, goes out to the swamp, and then dies there a natural death. So Tosus says over there, you're not going to be chayav. It's not classified as tchilat pshia b'sof but ones, because the ones afterwards where he dies has no relationship to the pshia. We can say, the machmor wants to kill, the animal's going to die, it's going to die here, it's going to die there, it's irrelevant. Now again, if the agam, if we say that the fumes or the air quality of the swamp are what caused the death, then there is causation between the pshia and the dying of the animal. But then it's not an onus anymore, because you have contributory negligence in the sense that your negligence letting it go is what caused the animal to die in the end. But Tosa says, if there is no relationship, then tchilat pshia b'sof ones does not apply. So that's one thing. Then Tosa says, also, you must believe over here that Surba Dirubani, the Gabe Ganve, the Gabe Ganavim, is a complete onus. That this was a good place to put it, and it was classified as a complete onus in the sense that we don't blame him for putting there with regards to Ganavim. Now, once you take the two pieces of Tosas together, you get a problem. Why? Because he says, Tchilat Pshia B'sof Ones needs some sort of causation or relationship. Now, on the other hand, he's saying that putting it out in the Tzurbei Erbani is considered as a good watching. That's a complete Shmirah from Ganavim. In the end, it got stolen by Ganavim. So I assume by Ganavim, what's the relationship between the Pshia that it could catch fire and the fact that he was an Ones and that was stolen by Ganavim? So what you have to say in the end is, unlike death, where you can say, Malchamavis Malihacha Malihatam, that's not true by Ganavim. Even though you're right, he put it in a place where it was watched properly. Nevertheless, they got it from this location. They got it from the Rabbani. The Ganavim came to this location. They found it there and they took it from there. Had it been in his house, they wouldn't have taken it. Right? So his pshia of not putting it in a proper place, meaning leaving it in a place that is flammable, then in the end is what caused the Gneva to happen. Not that he didn't watch it properly from a Gneva, but because it was in that location, that's why they were Gonev it. Because that's where they went. Had they been in his house, had it been in a better location, they wouldn't have found it because, not because there was a better shmira from Gneva, but just because it wasn't in the place that the Ganavim were. So you have to say that there was some causation in his pshia. The fact that he placed it there is what caused the ones later to happen. But nevertheless, it is an ones because it is still a good shmira from the Ganavim. Here, the Gemara brings another case here. Oh, Gavra, the Afke Zuzei Gabi Chavre, gave her money to his friend to watch. Amalei, Avle Zuzei, comes back and says, let me have my money back. Amalei, Yadana, Hechot Vino. I don't know where I put them. We saw this case earlier in the Gemara with Rav Nachman. And Rav now repeats the refrain that Rav Nachman said, Atul Kamei Derava, they came to Rava, Amalei, called Lo Yadana Pshuta Yizil Shlim. Anybody says, I don't know where it is, that's equivalent to saying that you're a Pusheya. I mean, if you don't know where his money is, then you're obviously not watching it properly. If you're not watching it properly, you're a Pusheya and you have to pay. El Gavra, new case, gave money over to his friend, Ashlimo the imate, and the friend then gave it to his mother to watch on his behalf. Vodvino Bakartalita, she locked them up in a chest, Vignov, and then they were stolen. So how can a Dayan deal with this case? What are we gonna say? How are we gonna execute or who are we gonna make culpable in this case? Namela did today we say to the Shomer, Zilshlim, go pay, Amarle, call him Afkid, Adatishto, Banavuk Mafkid. So now he'll say, listen, we know a mission earlier on that when a person gives over an object to a shomer, the expectation of the shomer is not that he will watch himself all the time, but rather that his family members are partners in the watching. So since his family members are partners in watching, giving over to his mother is not a pshia in any way. I mean, giving over to his mother is an expectation or something should be expected by the person who is mafkid the object with him. If that's the case, ish nakabi chayav. So now, on the other hand, name alayla ime zile shlime. So say to the mother, go pay. Amra lo amali de lavdi deininu. She says, I didn't know they weren't his. I thought it was my son's money. I didn't know I was watching for somebody else. I had to do extra care here. Dagavino, had I known it was a third party, I would have buried him in the ground. So now name alay. So let's go back to the shomer and say, amai lo amatma. Why don't you tell your mother that these were third parties' money? So I'm like, Oshkein. I thought, certainly, if she thinks they're mine, if it's talking about my son's money, of course they'll do a much better job taking care of it. Somebody else's money, all right, but my son's money, of course they'll do a better job. So he thought he was benefit. So what are we going to do over here? I'm like, Amarava, what are we going to do? Mishtaba, you, Danuzuze, Ashlamin, Ulime. He has to take a shvu'ah that he acted appropriately, that he gave the money to his mother. That's what he has to do. We have to be sure that he wasn't Shulech Biyah, that he didn't like the item, and he's claiming that it's Ganav. Make him take a shvu'ah to substantiate his claim that he gave it to his mother, which is appropriate in this case. Umishtaba, Ime, and then we make the mother take a shvu'ah, the Hanuzuze, Udvinu, Bekartulita, that she took this money, placed it in a chest, the Vignov, and they were stolen. Again, she takes a shvu'ah to substantiate her claim, which will make her patur. Upatur, and then both of them are patur, then nobody's obligated, because they both acted within what their knowledge of the information that they had, they both acted appropriately. So we make them take a shvu'ah that they did act in this way, which was appropriate, and therefore they both will be patur. Tosu points out over here, the fact that he gave it to his mother, and when he gave it over to a party that is related to him, a mishpacha, that we say that when a mafkid gives an object to a shomer, he expects him to give it also to his family, that's only that the Mafkid, the one who's giving over the property, doesn't have a claim that at l'mamet li b'shvuah, I don't believe your shvuah. He has to know that he gives it to this individual, he believes his whole family with the shvuah. But with regards to payment, to say that the individual has it is only responsible for the payment, but not the shomer himself, that you can't say. Rabbeinu Tam says, no way. Well, he gives it to his wife. In their day, wife had no independent ownership. She has no property. So now the shomer will give it to his wife. She'll go and eat it and use it up and be a posheya and say, oh, too bad, I can't pay you back. My wife doesn't have any money to pay you back. So she's really the one responsible now, so she'll pay you back. No. There we say that the shomer is responsible to compensate the individual. Now look, if there's another party who is responsible and did the responsible thing by watching it appropriately, then they are responsible to pay for it if they were pusheya. If they're not pusheya, then they're not responsible to pay for it. So over here, the mother is patur, and he is patur because his mother did or acted appropriately. Had his mother acted inappropriately, then either the mother would have to pay for it, or if the mother couldn't pay for it, the shomer himself would have to pay for it. We're not patur you from the compensation just because you gave it to another party. What we do say is that that is not considered a pshia when you give it over to this new party. All right, another case now that we have in the Gemara. How about Pichopo? There was a executive estate, the Atme, for these orphans. The Zalamu Torah, the Atme, he went ahead and he bought for them a shore. Umasra the Bakwa, and then he gave it over to the cowboy to watch on behalf of the Atomim. It turns out that the shore itself that he bought for them, this ox that he bought for them, didn't have any teeth, any molars or incisors. He didn't have teeth. The Mechal to eat. Umit, and it dies. So Amar Rabbi Bachama, Echin Adayna Dayan Lahaidina. How are we going to judge this case? What are we going to do? Who's culpable here? Namely, the Apichopo, we'll go say the executive state, Zil Shlim. Go pay. Amar, Ana Levakra Mesartia. I wasn't a pusher here. I did what anybody would do. I gave it over to a cowboy to watch on our behalf. I gave it over to someone who takes care of the animals. So, namely, the Bakra. So, let's say to the cowboy, Zil Shlim. Go pay. Amar, Ana Bahade Tori Ukimte. I said, I put him with my rest of my flock. They hand me an ox. I put him out with the flock. They're all grazing. I take care of him out in the fields. Uchlish adilei. I gave him food. Lo yadana d'lo achol. Right? So I don't know that he's not going to eat. How am I supposed to know that they never told me he didn't have teeth when they gave it to me? So what am I supposed to do? Michte, wait a minute. Bakra Shomer Sachar. The Bakra, the cowboy here, is a Shomer Sachar, the Atme, on behalf of the Yatomim. He's getting paid to watch this animal. He becomes a Shomer Sachar, but a Shomer Sachar. Oh, I buy a Lady Unet. He should have checked into it. I mean, we have higher expectations of a Shomer Sachar, especially a cowboy whose job it is to watch these animals, that will ensure that the animal's eating and being taken care of properly. The fact that he didn't notice that the animal didn't have teeth, that's not a sufficient reason for us to say that he's patur over here. So if Ika said the Diatme Hachanami, you're right. If they told me I'd lost money or the shore dies, they can't get their money back. They go after the Bakar, they go after the cowboy and say, you're Shomer Sachar. Shomer Sachar is Chayav in cases of what we classify here as Pshia, because he's Pusheya in the sense that he was paid to look after the animal and he should have looked more into the animal to make sure that it was eating properly and being sustained. But our case is different. Why? Mahochamai Skin and Deleka Pseida Diatme. In this case, the Yatomi don't lose any money. Why? Dashkochu Lamari Torah. They found the original owner, the person who sold it to them. They found v'shakol yatmei zuzimine, and they went back to him and says, "Mechachtos, you sold us an animal without teeth in it. Refund us the money." And he did. So now the original owner refunds money to the Tomim. So the Tomim are whole. The cowboy, okay, the shore died by him, but he's not owed any money now because, or he doesn't owe any money because the Tomim are whole, and he's done his job until the point that it died. Who's got the money? The guy who sold it. The thief, or in a sense, the cheater who sold it as a good shore, even though it didn't have teeth. Elamam katoin. So then the Gemara says, what's the question here? Who's the claimant in the case? If we solved all the problems, who's the claimant? Says Mari de Torah, the owner of the shore is katoin. He's going back to the cowboy. The owner of the shore is going to the cowboy and saying, listen, you got to pay up. You buy the little don. You should have told me it didn't have teeth in it. So the Gemara says, my modin, like, what do you mean he has to tell him that it doesn't have teeth in it? Mideyodu, the Mechachtol Davi. He knows that it was a false sale. I mean, he's the one who sold it. It's his shore. Of course he knows there's no teeth in it. What do you mean that the cowboy should have told him that there weren't teeth in it? Gemara says, no, we're down here with the Safsira. Down here with the middleman. He's a market maker. All he does is he buys and sells animals. He doesn't really get involved with animals. He doesn't know them. He just makes markets. He makes a middleman between people. And therefore, he has no clue what happened to the animal. Now, look, with regards to the Yatomim, he's got to pay them back because they were got lost. It was a mekach taut. That's not their problem. That he also got cheated by the seller to him, but he sold them wrong merchandise. He's got to refund it. So you tell me my whole. But now the Safsira, this middleman, says, I had no idea it didn't have teeth in it, and now it's with the cowboy. I say to the cowboy, listen, you gotta take care of me now. You gotta pay me back because you didn't take care of this animal that was mine. So now hilkach, what's the din? Mishdaba ihu delova yodo. He takes a shvuah. The cowboy, or the Safsira, I'm sorry, the Safsira, the middleman, takes a shvuah that he didn't know about it. And the bakar, the cowboy, pays him money, cheaper meat. So what's the case here? What happened in the end? So Rashi explains this over here. What right does this Safsira, this middleman, have to go after the cowboy at all? He's not a baldover to the cowboy. Maybe the Tomim are a baldover to the cowboy, but not the original owner, this middleman here. So Rashi says, Tmirani, Minayan Rami Bachama, didn't it? Where did he ever come up with this? Malu the Safsiri, my Ro'eh. What relationship does this middleman have with the Ro'eh, with the shepherd? Lo Shomer Shalohu. He's not his Shomer at all. He was hired by the Tomim, not hired by him. So Rashi says, no, that they learned it out from the Mishnah earlier on, which says, a Socher Para, the Chavero, person who rents out a shore and then lends it out to someone else, and then it dies. So the Shoel pays the Socher according to the Tanakam, and the Socher is Patur from paying the Balim. Rabbi Yossi over there disagrees, and Rabbi Yossi says, no, that the Maskir, the original owner, can go in and say, out of the way, Socher, I'm going right after the Shoel, I'm going after the Shoel himself, and he's going to pay me directly. That the Maskir can step into the shoes of the Socher and have a din with the Shoel. So that's what Rashi says, we're passing like Rabbi Yossi, and over here, that's exactly what's happening. We're saying to the Safsir is now saying, okay, the Yatomim are out of the picture here, but I'll step into the shoes of the Yatomim, because I'm losing money now because of this whole situation. I will step into the shoes of the Yatomim and go and then take a din and have a din with the Bakra, with the cowboy. And that's what Rashi says, Achanami, hold the ish the Tomim the Gvot Mina Ro'eh. Truthfully, the Tomim have rights to go after this cowboy here. Shu Shomer Sechar Shalahem. The only reason they're not going after him is Yomdu Balim Bimkomi Tomim Vegolin. And then the Balim, the original ones, can go after him too. mute, right? So in this case, the Itomim could have gone after the Bakar, after the cow, but the reason they're not is because they've made them whole by the middleman. There's Mekachtos, he's made them whole. But now the middleman says, listen, I'm going to step into their shoes and I'm going to go after this Bakar, this cowboy over here. And Rashi says, for instance, the Itomim had been the ones, the litigants here, the claimants against the Bakar, they would get paid full. Not Basar Zol, they get paid in full because the Yitomim are not b'nei mechila, they cannot forgive, they cannot give up any ownership, and therefore when the cowboy has to come, he has to convey full ownership. On the other hand, Rashi explains over here that the fact that the cowboy has to pay this individual is a little bit of a pshara. It's really a compromise over here. Why? Because that's not really a pshia. When you look at the cowboy, was he really a pusheya? He put him out. Remember how they told him, I put him out with the rest of my shvarim. I put him out in the herd. I didn't expect that he didn't have teeth. That's a really far-fetched situation. So we say, okay, he's a little bit of a pusheya, but he's not really a pusheya. If that's the case, he til pshara b'nehem. The Gemara says, the din is that we put a pshara. Because this is the fnim eshur tadim. V'lo yishalem kol dmei shor, k'mot shehu chai. He doesn't pay the full amount of the shor. Ela ha'or yachzir l'balim. He gives the skin, the carcass back to the balim. But basar shemin. Then he says, how much is the value of the meat that's there? Vishalem shnei shlishim, and he pays 2/3 of it. Whenever the Gemara uses the term zol, Rashi says it means 2/3. So Rashi indicates here the reason that the bakar, the cowboy, pays to the safsir, the middleman, 2/3 of the meat value is really a pshara. Because there's kind of, it's tied by here, it's tied by here. We can say that the cowboy is a pusheya, but he's not a total pusheya. He's a little bit of a pusheya, but not a total pusheya. On the other hand, the balim over here, when they're coming, the balim being a safsir, the middleman, was going after the cowboy, he could say, listen, you do have some rights to after him, but on the other hand, it wasn't a totally a pusheya. So we say, okay, pay 2/3 of the basar zol, and that's it. So that's Mishita Drashi. Rabbeinu Tam disagrees with Drashi and says, no, the fact that we pay basar zol over here is mi'ikar adin. It's not a pshara. It's not any compromise over here. Why is he paying basar zol? Because had the cowboy known about it, had the safsira known about it, right, what would they have done? They say this middleman buys it, and all of a sudden he finds out he bought something without teeth in it. What are his only options at this point in time? To shech the animal. The animal's going to die if it doesn't eat. So he can shech it right away. If he shechs it right away, he's got to sell the meat immediately. There is no shuk today. It's not the shuk day when he happens to get it. It's not the shuk day, it's basar zol, because he has to sell it cheaper. He can't wait until the shuk day to shech the animal, because the animal died before it gets to the shuk day. So anyway, mi'ikar adin, the only thing that the safsir, the middleman, could have done with his animal is get basar zol. So therefore, we only obligate the bakar, we only obligate the cowboy to pay him the basar zol, because that's mi'ikar adin, what he's entitled to. So Rashi thinks this is a pshara. And therefore, if it came to the Yotomim are not b'nei b'chila, and they can't compromise, they will get paid in full by the cowboy. On the other hand, the safsir, the middleman, will get paid only basar zol, because that's the compromise we make of being partial pshia, not a total pshia. And then Rabbeinu Tam says, no, basar zol is exactly what the animal is worth. Whatever it was worth is a basar zol, and that's all they'll get. Even if the Yotomim came to din with him, all they could have done with the animal again is get basar zol. They're going to get basar zol. They also would get that from the cowboy, and also this individual, the safsir, the middleman, now that he's paid back the Itomim, all he can get from his basar zol, because that's all he could have done with the animal. He has recourse against the person who sold to him, he has to go find them and get the mechach ta'ut. But in the interim, against the cowboy, the only claim he has is basar zol. And now, the Gemara continues. Somebody gave hops to his friend to wash him. How did he day? He also had, Nami, he had his own hops that were there. Kari of Kashuta. He had his own pile of hops. Amalei Lesari say, says to his hops maker, his beer maker in the house, someone took care of it. Mehai Rami, take from this pile, pointed to his own pile. Azal Rami Midach, the Shleach, the person who works for him, goes and takes from the pile that belonged to the individual who had left it with him, the Mafkid who had left it with him. So, what happens? Amar Avram, so again, the common thread between all these cases is that, say, Amor is saying, "What? How are we going to down this din?" So over here, what are we going to do? What's the psak aloch here? Namely, did they zil shleim? We say to the person, the shomer himself, go pay. Amar Lana, Amirei Mehai Rami. I told him to take from my pile. I didn't tell him to take from the other pile. So how could I be responsible here? Namely, the sar says zil shleim. If we say to the person who took it, go pay. Amar Lo Mehai Rami, Mehai Lo Tirmei. He didn't explicitly say, "Take from this, not from the other pile." He just said, "Take from." I thought this, or maybe the other pile is good. On the other hand, if the person who is in charge of the beer took time to come back, more time than it should have, then we say that it was galidata denechle, because then we know for sure that he knew that he was taken from the other pile. So for instance, say his pile is right here, it's proximate to us, it's right in front of us, and he says to the guy, take it from here. Then also he takes another 10 minutes and he shows up with the stuff. The only reason he would take him more time is because he went to the other pile that he was watching for the mafkia to put it with him. So if that's the case, he already knows that he's taken for the other pile, and he's mocha, that means that he knows, he's aware of it. If he's aware of it, we say, then he's going to be responsible, he's chayav in that case. On the other hand, in Moshe, if it doesn't take that much time, if they were either close by, or there was no way to discern whether he took from his pile or the other pile, in that case, what are we going to do? Losha, so, my, what's the din? Say the Ika, we have a loss here. Rekhmar says, well, why do you have to worry about the loss here? Haka, mishtashile. Why can't, if he has a pile of hops, and he uses his friend's hops, all he has to do is take his hops and replace his friend's hops. Meaning that we have a way to solve the problem here. He got the benefit of the hops that he used of his friends. So now, just take his own hops and give it to his friend, and now everybody's happy. Everybody got what they wanted. Rekhmar says, no, because there can be a problem here. Amar Osama Breit Rabo, the Hava Shikh Lachawa. That is a case here where the beer went bad. It turned into vinegar, it was no good. So if the beer turned out to be no good, that means the hops that he used of his friends ruined the beer. So now he has no benefit. And why should I give my good hops to my friend when the hops that I had are no good? Ravashi says over here that we're dealing with the case of kisei. Mashalim laid to make kisei, and then he's got to pay him back the monetary value of these kisei. What are these kisei? So Rashi explains kisei here are that they are poor hops, not good hops, and they actually have thorns, kotsim, ravimba, mixed in with them. So they are a weakened form of the hops. Therefore, they don't benefit the beer extensively. And he's actually upset that he put them in there. So he doesn't want to give him back proper or good hops that he has of his own. Rather, he has to pay him for the value or the increased value or benefit that he got from the hops of his friend that he placed in there. That's Rashi's interpretation. This just adds here to the pshat of Rashi that what's the chiddush? Of course he has to pay for the benefit that he got from the hops. It did improve the value of the beer, even though it weren't poor hops. It still increased the value of the hop of the beer. So he says, even though the hops themselves would have been worth more for feed, animal feed, nevertheless, he wants to pay the benefit that he got within the hops. I mean, that had the owner of these poor hops given them to feed as animal, they would have gotten much more money for it. Instead, he used them, the shomer used them for hops in his beer, and it didn't improve the beer so much. He's actually going to get paid back a much lesser amount. So Tosa says that's the chiddush here, that he only has to pay for the improvement in the beer. He doesn't have to pay him the value that would have been had they been given to Behemoth. On the other hand, the Rabbeinu Hananel explains over here that these kisei is that they are a specific type of hops that actually need softening in order to be efficacious. And so what he didn't do here is he didn't soften them beforehand. So since he didn't soften them beforehand, they really didn't benefit. They didn't help him at all. And what's the Kamash Malan? What's the Chiddush here? Is that he has to pay him the value of the improvement in the beer, even though it's very little. Despite the fact, had he just done a little more work or had him waited for them to soften a little more, they would have been perfect hops. Nevertheless, he's not responsible to pay for that full amount, but only to the amount that it improved his beer over here. So in conclusion, the Gemara is saying why he doesn't replace the hops of his friends with his hops is because they're of a different quality. And since they're of a different quality, what he does have to pay him for is the benefit that he derived from his friend's hops, but he doesn't have to replace them with the good hops that he has over here. Okay, we'll stop here.